This is CliffCentral.com.
Richard, are we on track with the financial pack for my presentation to the board next week?
Well, hopefully. The team's very short-staffed, and it's taking such a long time to find a suitable financial manager for the division. We're way behind on all our forecasts and reporting.
Why don't you speak to the finance team? They're a consultancy that can help you with an experienced interim financial manager. You can have somebody to help you almost immediately. They'll hit the ground running with no long-term contracts and no upfront placement fees.
Go to thefinanceteam.co.za.
Welcome to our Business Masterclass. I'm Richard Angus, CEO of the Finance Team, your part-time financial executive solution. Joining me in studio as part of our panel is Leandi Streeter, a business coach and guide from Raise Corp. Welcome, Leandi.
Good morning. Thank you.
Thanks for being with us. Today's theme, diversifying out of a stalled South African economy. Joining us on the line is our guest, Sean Temlett, Chief Innovation Officer of iCampus. They specialize in managed training services. Sean, welcome.
Thanks, Richard, and good morning to everybody.
It's been great to have you on the show with us today. Thank you. And might I add, no stranger to the show. You've joined us on a few other occasions. We really always appreciate your insights. So, Sean, I had a look at a piece of data that was put out there by Stats SA. It said the following: GDP in the first quarter of 2017 contracted by 0.7%. Large negative contributor to the growth in GDP in the first quarter was trade, catering, and the accommodation industry, which decreased by 5.9%, contributing 0.8%. To that drop in GDP growth. The manufacturing industry contracted 3.7%, and I look at this and I go, wow, okay. So if we say we're in a stalled economy, that would be, I guess, a minor understatement. If you look at areas like, you know, trade, catering, accommodation, manufacturing industries, I mean, this is big. I mean, I guess, Where are we going to find that growth that everybody needs? I mean, every business in South Africa is looking for growth. I mean, years ago we used to talk in the world of banking. We used to say the seeking for growth and yield internationally. But now we're into the space of just looking for growth, just in the good old South African economy.
So, Richard, you know, the numbers are not very good, are they?
No, not good at all.
And if you layer on top of that, let's just step away from the GDP numbers for a moment and let's look at South Africa as a competitive entity. You'll be aware it dropped 14 places in the World Economic Forum competitiveness report. And these are big numbers, and they take a long time to change one way or the other. So this is not something that's new. This is something that's been brewing now for easily the last 5 to 7 to 10 years, perhaps. And I think that, for me, is as big a worry as the GDP numbers. You know, if our industries are not competitive, then the chances of them recovering the GDP is remote. But, of course, when we look at the economics of South Africa, one has to be cautious of lumping everything into one sort of set of economic data. I think there are still pockets of growth. I mean, I know we're seeing growth in tourism still in the Eastern and the Western Cape, or more the Western Cape. But it's not enough. It's not enough to keep our economy growing and to make it attractive for foreign investment.
Yeah.
And that's what worries me about the manufacturing sector. I mean, that's really where we beneficiate, where we add real value to the raw materials and commodities out of Africa. And we've been talking about beneficiation for 40 years, Richard, and we're just not getting there.
Yeah, we keep exporting that raw material, raw product, and you just kind of go, my goodness, guys, we need to add value here.
Yes. So one must continue to invest in order to make those large economic wheels turn in our favor. But the question is, what do we do in the meantime, and how do we keep from spinning out while we make those big adjustments in the South African economy?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess we've kind of got the scenario of this is the landscape. And as we always say, you know, in golf, where the ball lands, you have to play the ball. So where we, how are we going to play the ball? I mean, I guess the point is, okay, when it's downtime, it's a good opportunity for us to be thinking about, you know, using that quiet time, as one may call it, or the downtime productively inside your business. I mean, what are your thoughts there? I mean, what should people be doing?
Absolutely. I mean, when businesses are growing helter-skelter, they are under risk. And you'll know this, Richard, with your financial background, that cash flows become pressurized as the business grows, working capital cycles go out a little bit, and so organizations put themselves under strain and they put debt on the books and all of those good things. And, you know, in a rising tide, that's fine. That's good and well. The revenues are going up and everybody's sort of managing the process without too much risk. But obviously when the tide goes out and you're left with, you know, poor working capital, or you're left with debt on your balance sheet that you put on there during the good times, I think it's incumbent on all CEOs to sit down and take stock of their organizations. You know, it's one thing to focus on outside opportunity all the time, but I think you also have to look at your internal risks and your internal weaknesses. So I think during at times like this, I know in my businesses, we do a lot of repair work, and that is not just on the asset side. It's also on the people side of the business. It's about regrowing and retraining people. It's also about looking at new strategies. It's also about looking at customers, asking yourself which customers are working really well for you and how you're looking after them. So there is, you know, it's like being in the property business. You know, when the tenants move out, that's when you fix up the buildings. And I think the same analogy applies to our businesses.
So I have a question here. With regards to diversification, and yes, of course, taking some time to take stock inside the business, shouldn't we also continue to hunt? And one of the things that we do at Raise Corp a lot is we do not tame our lions. We're very much about creating independent, self-sufficient, sustainable, even in a tough time, guys that go out there, they hunt, they make it happen while taking stock, while growing, while scaling. Because inevitably, you cannot sit and wait for the economic situation to turn. Somebody is a trigger. Somebody enables that besides government. So who is it that needs to keep hunting? And where can we look for alternative opportunities? What is it that we need to do to diversify, to ensure that our cash flow, yes, of course, it's at risk, it's taking strain, but the great hunters, they're, you know, by hook or by crook, they make it happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I think the reality is hunting in the South African market at the moment requires you to take market share away from your competitors. So it is a tough market at the moment. In the market that we play in, which is corporate training, there's lots of players out there, low barriers to entry. The decision-making cycles of our clients are quite long. The investment is quite large. And so one has to continually look at your value proposition and ask yourself, what are you doing to be more competitive than your competitors? And I think this can be exciting because it requires attention and it requires focus. And of course, our focus at iCampus on innovation means that when we look at these barriers and we look at these constraints, we're always looking for what is the innovative solution to that. So the point that you're making, which is it's about still generating sales while you fix up the business or you correct the business, is absolutely correct. But it's not just about going head on with your traditional competitors. I think you have to ask yourself, what is it that my client is feeling and what is the pressure? What are the pressure points, or as we call them, the points of pain and the points of pleasure that our customers are asking for at the moment? And then it's about addressing those. So I can perhaps give you an example, a quick example. You know, in the world of training, executive training, there's a lot of focus on cost. And we understand that. So we want to be as cost effective as possible. But those corporates also don't want their management team and their leaders out of the business for long extended periods of time. So to the extent that we as a training organization can reduce the amount of time that the executives are away from the desk and still maximize the return on the investment in terms of outcomes and skills, that might make us more competitive. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. That, I mean, it's a client-centric world we're living in, and it's no longer inside out. It's very much an outside in from a market perspective, place to play. And also, do you not think that this presents opportunity? Because it's not just, you know, small business that takes strain. It's obviously your larger customers and your clients. So identifying those pains and finding new ways to resolve them, would that not present some interesting opportunities?
Yes, so that's happened for us well, in the sense that clients are coming back with much more interesting challenges. So it's not business as usual. And I think it's about, I think one of the things that we like to think we do well is responsiveness. So when a client says to us, look, we want to do things a little bit differently, for us, there are no holy cows. It's a case of, okay, how do we respond to that challenge? So I think doing business in South Africa is really about having to be more competitive and take perhaps more market share away rather than just being part of a growing market. And it's about being responsive to what those customer requirements are.
Now, Sean, I mean, there's always the challenge of being stuck in one market segment. I mean, let me use your business. You're in, executive training. In our businesses, we're in, providing part-time financial executives into companies.
Correct.
We're talking with a very specific, let's call it product and service set, and many companies are in this space. You know,
yes.
When the growth slows, do you revisit that scenario? How do you revisit it? What are your thoughts there?
Exactly. We get trained to do this. If you go back to management training, we always ask, what are your new products? What are your new markets? So that you can stimulate growth. And what I'm finding increasingly today is that when you look at new products and you look at new markets, and I'll give you a in a moment, the ability to do that, it sometimes requires you to fundamentally change the business model. So Richard, you and I have businesses which has a standard business model. In my case, it's number of executives on training with us at any point in time. For us to reach into new markets, sometimes we have to change the product fundamentally so that it's perhaps more transportable. And we may also have to change the way that we deliver that product to the customer. So let me give you a real example of this. So our core business is about putting executives in a classroom type setting. Perhaps sometimes there's a thing that goes with that, but traditionally we teach pretty much like business schools have taught for hundreds of years around the world. With this challenge of kind of growing our business, we sat down and said, okay, where are the hungry fish? Who's hungry out there for training? And how do they want to receive this training from us? Now, that's a completely different set of questions, isn't it? As you said earlier, it's an outside-in approach. And in our research, we kind of focused on the Indian market. And people say, well, why the Indian market? It's not that we only focus on the Indian market, but they are a proxy for English-speaking students around the world who are downloading digital training from the web. And they are enormous consumers of that. Now, how we reach those people is very different to what our current business model is, and what we charge is also very different. But actually, the product that we provide, the people and the training and the outcomes and the facilitators and the people with the content is the same, except that it's obviously digitized to reach 13 million odd people who are hungry for training. And the interesting thing is that South Africans are we are pretty good business people with lots of experience. And so therefore, we're quite attractive to that international market, and we share the same language, which is also quite useful.
What would you, just as a matter of interest, what would you attribute our more innovativeness and our sort of ability to come up with new offerings and solutions to as South Africans?
Look, that it's such a good thing. because sometimes it comes out of a survivalist mentality. In other words, how do we actually survive in our current environment, which is not that conducive to business? So there is an element of that. But I think the positive side of that is that innovation is not just about opportunity identification. It's also about the most efficient way of fulfilling that opportunity with the least possible resources. And so I think one can be very innovative in how one actually closes out those opportunities. And if you can do that in a way which is risk-reducing and reduces the amount of capital and other resources that are required, I think that, that's a good thing. And I think South Africans, we've had to become good at that because we are a resource-constrained environment. If you look at the capital that's available, if you look at the size of our market, it's not particularly big. If you look at our efficiencies, there's a whole range that you can look at. The cost of data, the cost of telecommunications is quite high. Our people costs are actually quite high if you consider our productivity and so forth. And so, in fact, I think what South Africans do quite well is that they make a plan. And they execute on those opportunities in a way which is perhaps more efficient than if we were in a non-resource constrained context.
Now, I mean, Sean, if I look at the constraints that we often, it's called, place on ourselves. I mean, we you know, we go, I'm in a business-to-business market, or I'm in the business-to-consumer market, and that's that's where I play. What I'm what I'm hearing you saying is, you know, you're going, well, we facilitate conversations, learning conversations, and you can now do this through a digital method. So that's, let's call it, change the channel to the same to the market. But what about getting to a different market? So you've been talking to in your business, you're talking to corporates, so that's a business to business market. What about a business to consumer market?
Right. So in fact, what you've highlighted is actually the big shift that we've had to make this year, is that in the business to business market, budgets are under a lot of pressure at the moment, and the of big companies to just release people onto academic or business school type training has shrunk. Okay, and we don't want to stop that. We love that business. It's what our value system thrives on. It's that person to person contact. But one has to diversify, and in a sense, you're right. We've actually taken a step in towards sort of a business to consumer market, and we've had to adjust our business model completely. So to give you an example, an individual that comes on corporate training, the company can expect to spend anything between 20 and 100,000 rand for that individual, depending on what the outcomes requirements are. Where we offer a 20-minute digitized piece of training on the web, we charge anything between 20 rand and $200. $20, $20 US and $200 US. So you can immediately see the one business model is, you know, a low number of people, fairly high cost per person. The other business model is enormous numbers of people, paying a much smaller amount of money for a smaller piece of the action. And yet it's scalable. Why is it scalable? Because it's digitized. And it's using, you know, all the disruptive technologies that we keep talking about. What's nice for us is that those two markets don't really overlap. So we don't find top executives coming to us and saying, can you please give us a library of, you know, online digitized bite-sized pieces of information. And that's not what they're looking for. What they're looking for is application. They're looking for relevance to their current business. They're looking for diversity of thinking. Those are very different requirements to somebody that says, listen, show me the basics of finance or show me the basics of marketing and strategy, and I will digest that myself. I will watch the tutorial three or four times over, and I take responsibility for my own training. Completely different. So we're not really cannibalizing the one with the other, if that makes sense to you.
And Sean, I guess the reality is as well that you now have the ability to generate what I would call offshore flows.
Yes.
So
yes.
The digitized platform, you can basically be giving this to somebody in Finland or in Bangladesh or somebody, you know, in Cape Town. It doesn't really matter where you physically are. I always use the example when I talk about cost base to people. I always use a comparison of and I mean, everybody I think knows the good old Sun City of the day. Back in the day, you know, they built Sun City and it was the gambling venue in the independent homeland, because that's where you had to go to gamble back in the day. Back in the day, and you look at the cost of for Sun International of building that massive infrastructure to facilitate gaming, and then you compare that with a online casino, you know, Pig's Peak online casino, or whatever you call it, and
I
often use this when I'm doing ratios with people, and I talk about the return on asset ratio, and I go, guys, who do you think is winning here? You know, Sun International with the cost of Sun City to get that gaming revenue in, or the same, or even half of the gaming revenue on the back end of click, 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 click. And people always laugh at, they say to me, oh, but the guys at the casino have to, you know, they have to have the computers. And I look at them and I say, oh, yes, and you haven't heard of cloud computing yet. And they look at me in horror as they realize that we've just moved.
Right.
Let's call it the technical disruptors have not only disrupted, let's call it the bricks and clicks model, but the clicks have now been disrupted by the you have to own the tin versus you can just own the usage of the tin. We recently had a show on that people will find in the archives on the whole question of the usage, let's call it mentality, and the principle of the, you know, Uberizing things and just paying for usage versus ownership. And I think it is so critical how that, let's call it, approach and thinking has shifted, and it continues to shift, and it's now adjusting how we do other parts of business models, and enabling things. I mean, if you go back 5 years, the concept that you didn't own the server that you put your IT on, nowadays most people, like you look at them and you say, you own a server. I mean, other than, you know, your big banks and your bigger corporates, but in most cases, you know, you say to somebody, I own a server, and they look at you like you've actually lost it, and they go like, do you realize you could outsource this and actually have none of the pain? So I think we have got into that world where, and it's also quite interesting because it's introduced, and we're talking about growth, it's introduced a whole new range of, let me call them lines of business or business activities into the economy. You know, if you said to somebody, "I'm a cloud, we run a cloud service providing company," 5 years ago, people would like look at you and go, "Oh, that's like a high risk thing." You know? A few years ago, that whole internet thing, people weren't quite so sure that internet thing was going to work. Talking about that, and I mean, obviously, generating growth through virtual offerings is clearly an opportunity, but there's also the opportunity to let's call it lead generate into your space when you need that diverse, you know, when growth is slow and you want a little bit of diversification. I mean, I know we're not great at this in South Africa. I think it's, you know, I think we struggle with our own networks and our I think we are by nature, particularly in the business communities, it is quite closed networking type of environments.
Right.
But elsewhere, elsewhere in the globe, you know, you in the States, you go to people and you say, I'm going to pay you, you know, I want to pay for your service, and you're going to go out there and lead generate for me. And their whole business is just doing lead generation. I mean, that must be a great way to diversify and grow. From a growth perspective, getting your leads get somebody else to get your leads for you.
Yeah, so Richard, I think that's a good piece of advice, which I think I'm following up on. Thank you for sharing that with us. I don't use I don't use any of these sort of aggregators or these lead generators, mainly because our traditional business has been kind of word of mouth, and it's based on past experience. And we have traditionally focused extensively on the financial services and the retail sector. So there's probably, you know, 30 or 40 key decision makers in the South African context. But you're right. If one starts to look outside of South Africa, then the question is, how do you reach the decision makers? So let's use an example. If I want to reach a decision maker in the hotel and leisure industry for Africa, where am I going to find those people? Some of them have offices in Dubai. They run their Africa operations out of Dubai. How do you reach those people? Because you didn't go to university with them, etc.
You often don't speak their local language. You're not part of their cultural space.
Correct.
I recently,
how do you get introduced to them?
Look, I recently became so aware. We had an interaction with a potential local client who's a subsidiary of an international company based in Japan. And I was really amazed. They have a regional office in the Middle East, and they have Japanese MD is local, and then some financial controllers, etc., in the Middle East. And I was amazed at how, you know, I think we all think of English as our first language, and we're just so comfortable with it. But when you're suddenly dealing across many of the cultural divides across and I mean, you experience this into Europe, you experience this into other countries in the Far East, the Malaysias, the Philippines of the world, et cetera. You know, we mustn't forget that you know, to operate in those environments. I mean, I don't know about you, but my networking capabilities in Tokyo is a little scratchy, to say the least. And you know, I mean, I recently, a year ago, had an opportunity to travel into China, and I was surprised at how prevalent English was as a language in terms of signboards and things like that. But you're still dealing in Cantonese and Chinese all of these things, and you realize that language is still such an impediment to growth. And once you pass that point where opportunities can flow, if you've got people that can facilitate that, wow, then things really start moving.
I know. So I'm a little stuck in the past, where I rely quite extensively on my own network to kind of get introductions and so forth. But I think the time is coming where one has to kind of scout around for professional companies who will introduce you to the decision makers in those organizations. You can't hear a bit of hesitation in my voice because one worries to some extent, you know, who these brokers and gatekeepers might be. And of course, in South Africa at the moment, there's quite a spotlight on organizations that essentially maybe play some of that role in introducing companies to one another. So I think there is an opportunity there, but one just has to be careful of your brand and how your brand is used in the marketplace.
Exactly, and be careful of who you do business with. You know, pick your lead generation providers and people who work with you very, very, very carefully. Sean, it's been great. It's been great chatting to you. We really appreciate your insights. We trust that people will, from this podcast, have given some thought to how they diversify their businesses. That was our guest, Sean Temlett, Chief Innovation Officer of iCampus. Next up is our business conversation. Stay with us.
This is CliffCentral.com.